Paul, tell us about Peter, Paul, and Mary. Of course, you started, what, with a string of hit records in 1963, lasted up through 1970, and you had so many, what, six or seven top ten songs. Did you have a personal favorite among all of them?
Oh, they each, you know, every year or so, when the song came along, it would be a delight to have been involved in it. So I can't really say that a favorite stands out, except you just have a tendency to remember the circumstances. For instance, I always felt that my tempo, my sense of rhythm was pretty bad until a fellow by the name of Skip Prokop, who went on to form a group called Lighthouse, which also had a top 10 single in the 60s, called me into the recording studio while we were working on the track for I Dig Rock and Roll Music and said, "Come on, Stookie, you can play cowbell." And so I have a tendency to look and remember I Dig Rock and Roll Music fondly.
I dig rock and roll music.
I won't take you back to when I was a small child living in Dorsey, Maryland, but I will try to give you a little bit of background. When Peter asked me to write a song for his wedding, he was asking a guy that he had worked with for 8 years, but more importantly than that, in terms of the song, he was asking a fellow who had just become a reborn Christian. Now, what that meant was that Peter asked if I would write a song to bless his wedding. Well, now, I knew I wasn't capable of blessing the wedding, but I knew for sure that I had just gotten off the phone with somebody who could. And so I went into a portion of the house where I used to write some songs, and I said, "Lord, you're the most important thing that's happened in my life. How can I best bring you to Peter's wedding?" And then these words, it became so obvious. You know, he said, "I am now to be among you at the calling of your hearts. Rest assured, this troubadour is acting on my part." And the whole song was delivered to me in this kind of first person, and I wrote it down, and when it got translated to third person, you know, "He is now to be among you," and then got put on a record and then got an inordinate amount of airplay right away, I was in the process of deciding what to put down as the author of the tune. Now, you know, you don't see tunes that have God written in parentheses mm-hmm. underneath the tune. George Burns probably wouldn't mind.
Yes.
But I said, "Okay, well, I've got this idea," and I sat with it and prayed with it for a while, and it's turned out to be a remarkably efficient way of dealing with the situation, Joe. I assigned the tune all of its publishing and all of its writing royalties to a foundation called the Public Domain Foundation. And the reason that I picked Public Domain as the name was I knew that the small uses of the song, that is, you know, in the local weddings and even the church books, where it was only published in the community or among a body of believers, or I knew that its small use would not be inhibited by having it belong to a publishing company. But then when it got used by larger groups like Opatula Clark or the Captain and Tennille or other people who've recorded it, mm-hmm. then I knew that the monies that would be coming would go into a fund, and the best way to administer those monies would be the same way that the song was given to me, by prayer. So over a period of the past, 12 or 13 years, the Public Domain Foundation has administered over $1 million to charities, organizations, groups that I have really felt the Lord has directed me to place the money in.
Nice thought. Nice idea.
There's your story. As I understand it, it was Spiro Agnew and we had it on pretty good authority that somebody in Newsweek decided to make it appear to take the concept that Spiro Agnew had started, which was that these songs had double meanings, and to carry it to its most absurd level. Unfortunately, there was no absurdity that was too insurmountable for the for that particular mind frame to handle. So for a while, Puff the Magic Dragon suffered at being construed as course, it never